Oh my god.
No, it's from the back of the base.
Oh, that's tipped before. I've had to fix it before.
It's when you surprise me with that I'm just like.
Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:04 p.m. Today is Friday, April 30th. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Tom Raymond from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have a full committee at the beginning. Representative Eastman, Representative Vance, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Drummond, Representative Kirka, my vice chair, Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Clayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Joint Resolution 1, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund, POMV, and Earnings, sponsored by Representative Christ Tompkins. This is the second hearing of the joint resolution in the House Judiciary Committee. At this time, we will take up amendments to the resolution, and I will put on the record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our office received one amendment to House Joint Resolution 1. We treat the amendment process like floor amendments. The maker of the amendment moves the amendment and speaks to it with a three-minute limit. Then we'll take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question. Then we will proceed to discussion with each member limited to 3 minutes. And finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. And we have one amendment, and that would be the amendment for Representative Christ Tompkins. Could I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 1I.1.
I'll object for discussion.
Representative Christ Tompkins, tell us about amendment number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may defer to Mr. Stepp for the introduction and explanation of the amendment, I think the committee would be well served.
Mr. Stepp, please come forward and you can respond to the discussion of amendment number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jeff Stepp, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. I made myself an amendment explanation sheet, which I went ahead and shared with members of the committee, and I know that your aide was placing it on basis as well. There's two parts to the amendment, really. One is a simple technical change. In the original draft of the amendment, we made a mistake and did not have the unencumbered balance of the ERA being deposited to the permanent fund after the election. So we need to change June 30th, 2022 to June 30th, 2023. Simply, June 30th, 2023 comes after the election of November 2022. That's the easy part. The second part, Mr. Chairman, is a policy call. It was brought to our attention that if this amendment were to pass and went to a vote of the people, the election would be in November of 2022, and the unencumbered balance wouldn't be deposited into the permanent fund until the end of that fiscal year, leaving the ERA vulnerable to a withdrawal before the deposit. So in order to protect the ERA, what we have sought to do with this amendment is establish that on the date of the election, an amount equal to the balance on that day shall be deposited on June 30th. If the legislature would deplete the ERA below that balance as of November 2022, then by the end of the fiscal year, they would be required to find the money to put back into the deposit. The intent, obviously, is to discourage a raid on the permanent fund during that time. And I hope that explains it clearly, and I'm certainly happy to take any questions.
Questions either for Representative Christ Tompkins. Did you want to ask your staff questions?
If I could add an addendum to his introduction.
Please.
Mr. Chair, and on that last point, the amount equal to language, the, I think, specific scenario that isn't per se likely but could be contemplated is the constitutional amendment is ratified by the voters in the November 2022 election. There's a full legislative session that will succeed that ratification. And technically, if the legislature were so willing, even though it would be kind of thumbing its nose in the voter's face, it could appropriate the entirety of the earnings reserve account into a statutory budget reserve. They could create a brand new pot of money that they wanted, and they could just move $10 or $15 billion out of the permanent fund, which would certainly be contrary to the will of the voters and the will of the constitutional amendment, but would be technically and legally possible. And so this is language that would sort of provide a security against such a cynical action, not saying that such a cynical action would ever come to pass.
Questions either for the maker of the amendment or his staff? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question that I have for either one of you is on the last line of your explanation. The permit fund deposited into the permit fund and become part L of the principal of the fund. Can you please describe part L?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Vance, as I look at that, I think this being the first time I ever used the feature to edit a PDF, I think it's simply a typo. I was having trouble fitting it onto the page. I think when I was changing the size of the font, that is a remnant of that, and I apologize.
Thank you for that. I thought you were testing our knowledge of the permanent fund, and I'm like, there's an L? But thank you for that, because it definitely, I think you just lightened the mood a little bit.
Anybody have questions about part M, N, O, or P? Representative Eastman?
Yes, through the chair to the sponsor. So you have June 30th, 2023, and I understand that certainly accomplishes the part about being after the election, and after the election certified and so forth. Why so late that we've, you know, created maybe longer than necessary a window that we're trying to solve with the second part of the amendment?
Representative Eastman, I think the idea is to conform to the fiscal year and just sort of allow that legislature to see through the fiscal year and the appropriation process, knowing that the amendment has passed. So that's the thinking.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I was wondering if you could speak to the, I guess, constitutionality or lack thereof of trying to tell the legislature that they need to make a specific appropriation, which kind of seems like you're saying, hey, you need to pass a bill for an appropriation, you know, kind of in a particular time, and also maybe limiting them undoing that previous to it happening, if that makes sense, coming in on the morning of November 8th and doing something with it or something like that. I'm just, seems like you're trying to be very particular, and I'm just a little fuzzy on sort of the constitutional principles involved in that.
Representative Eastman, through the chair, I can't profess any expertise on whether this might cross any constitutional red lines or go into gray area. I don't believe we got a memo flagging any constitutional concerns from legislative legal upon request of the memo, though Mr. Stepp could correct me if I'm mistaken in saying that. I guess I've assumed it from analogous constitutional language, mostly around constitutionally guaranteeing the dividend. I sort of assume that if you're putting it in the Constitution, you're therefore ensuring its constitutionality sort of ipso facto. But there may be other angles that I simply just haven't considered.
Actually, Representative Eastman, rather than a follow-up, you asked a question, a legal question, and Emily Nauman from Legislative Legal Service is available online, and so rather than go to your next question, Ms. Nauman, did you hear Representative Eastman's question for Representative Christ Tompkins about constitutional issues?
Yes, Chair Klayman, I did, and for the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I hope I'm answering your question when I say that The current HJR 1 requires that the balance of the earnings reserve account be deposited into the permanent fund. The permanent fund cannot be appropriated except in accordance with the permanent fund section of the Constitution, but the balance of the earnings reserve is currently, the entire balance is currently free for any appropriation in any fiscal year. So there's not a restriction on a future legislature from making that appropriation of the balance of the ERA from the ERA account into the corpus of the permanent fund.
Further follow-up, Representative, does that answer your earlier question, or do you have more follow-up on that or on a different area?
I won't say that I'm 100% clear just yet, but I'm trying.
All right, go ahead, follow up.
You know, I think one of the questions that's come up from time to time is how the state is going to pay its various legal obligations if there isn't as much money available. For example, if the earnings reserve is not much money in it and we have liabilities to, say, pension obligations, so forth, you know, what would the Constitution require us to do? Because, of course, it requires us to pay our obligations and not violate contracts. And so in this scenario, I'm just wondering, couldn't the legislature just, you know, say, hey, we already spent the money, or somebody else already spent the money in ERA, so we gotta get it from somewhere to satisfy this bit. So we're just gonna reach into the permanent fund to move the money to the ERA so that it can go back to the permanent fund or something like that. Because, I mean, it's kind of like a small constitutional crisis, because in this scenario we're painting, there isn't any money in the ERA, and we're telling them to come up with money from somewhere to put it in the ERA. So I guess, is there a way we keep them from saying, oh, well, the only way we can go, or the best way we go, is to go into the corpus to satisfy this constitutional requirement?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, interesting scenario, sort of pitting constitutional language against constitutional language in this hypothetical. I would imagine in such a scenario we'd have judicial interpretation, because if such a again, I would use the word cynical maneuver were attempted, I imagine someone would take someone to court over it, be it the legislature or concerned citizen or whomever. I imagine, let's see, well, I imagine the courts might look at legislative intent, and I can say the intent of the amendment is that in no scenario, form or fashion, should the principle at all sort of be put at jeopardy in order to satisfy this transition language that is embodied in Amendment Number 1 to HJR 1. That said, if we're just running with a hypothetical sort of for the sake of the constitutional question that is embodied in it, I recall from fisheries law, and looking at constitutional questions associated with fisheries law, that there are sort of hierarchies of what constitutional language sort of trumps other constitutional language that I think has been established in various precedents in the Alaska Supreme Court, and I can't speak fluently to that. I wonder if that might come into play. Again, I think I'd probably defer to Ms. Nauman for a more authoritative explanation, but there's a couple of contemplations, and most, I think, most importantly, a clarification of intent in this amendment.
So, for purposes of presenting that question to Ms. Nauman, the hypothetical that I think Representative Eastman presents is that this amendment gets approved by the voters on the 2022 election, and then passing no judgment on the wisdom of doing so, at the following legislature, before the end of the year, the legislature musters the votes to entirely empty the ERA and use it somewhere else, so there's no money in the ERA when the end of the year comes along. Ms. Nauman, what would be the constitutional impact of having done so? That's the first hypothetical. If the legislature did that, what would be the remedy?
Chair Klayman, again, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, for the record. I imagine that Representative Chris Tompkins is correct. That would take some sort of judicial intervention and decision. The amendment is structured such that if the legislature raided the ERA, the legislature would be responsible for coming up with the balance of the ERA from funds elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I could imagine one possibility, potentially a court finding that the legislature has to continue to make payments every with incoming revenue every year to satisfy that constitutional requirement. But I think that, yeah, it would probably depend on the facts of the nature of the raid and the intent of both the legislature in passing this amendment to the Constitution and the amendment to the amendment that we're considering and why and for what purposes the money was taken. Representative Chris Tompkins did bring up that there are some judicial rules about interpreting the Constitution and statutes. He's absolutely right. They would look to the intent, but also they look for language that is both more recent and more specific, so they would give priority to those types of changes.
Representative Eastman, follow-up.
Thank you, and through the chair again. So to maybe pivot from a cynical scenario to just a more pessimistic one, what happens in this amendment if the legislature does exactly what we want them to do and they act splendidly, which of course you always hope happens, but there's a market crash and the funds are not available in the ERA when it comes time to make this withdrawal. It could happen, so I'm wondering, what is the legal impact of passing this amendment? Does it, in one sense, potentially risk negating Section 2 and lowering the amount of money that can be withdrawn from the corpus, maybe something less than 5% in that kind of scenario? Or please help me understand, what the legal impact would be.
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, again, for the record, this is Emily with Legislative Legal Services, Emily Nauman. The amendment to the amendment does require...
Ms. Nauman, just to note, there's no amendment to the amendment. There's just a single amendment to the resolution.
Sorry, yes, I'm speaking to the resolution as if it's the constitutional amendment. The amendment to the resolution does state that it would be the higher of the balance on November 8th or the day that the withdrawal occurs from the ERA. So I guess in the event of a market crash, yes, the legislature could be potentially in a situation where there are insufficient funds in the ERA to meet that greater of test. I think, again, the legislature might have to scrape together money from other places, or if the legislature was just completely out of money, again, like we discussed before, possibly a lawsuit would result and the courts would have to step in and figure out how the legislature could satisfy that constitutionally required balance to be paid into the corpus of the permanent fund. The underlying resolution language would not change in that case, in that the legislature could still appropriate 5% of the POMB from the permanent fund, and the corpus of the permanent fund other than that annual withdrawal would not be available for appropriation. Even in that circumstance, I believe that the constitutional language is very clear and doesn't allow the legislature to withdraw money from the permanent fund, even in the permanent fund corpus, even in the event of a financial difficulty.
Thank you very much.
Further follow-up?
Thank you. And through the chair.
Representative, just a note that I've got to probably have to head up to Senate Labor and Commerce at 1:45, and if we haven't finished everything on this, we'll take a at ease and come back.
Very good. You had said a moment ago, Ms. Nauman, that the higher amount, and I'm just wondering, how do we get to that interpretation? I don't see that language, clearly spelled out here. Should it be spelled out here, or how is it already maybe in the amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, sorry, I'm just looking at the amendment. Amount equal to... I'm sorry. I think I must have been thinking of another doing many of these drafting projects. Does it just say the amount equal to November 8th? Is that the correction? Perhaps Jeff could correct me there. But does it just say the balance equal to November 8th?
He doesn't need to correct you. I can confirm that's exactly what the amendment to the resolution would mean, that the amount to be deposited on June 30th, 2023 would be the amount equal to the balance, the unencumbered balance on November 8th, 2022 of the earnings reserve account.
Yes, sorry, that's my mistake then. I've been working on so many of these projects, I think I got it confused with a different one. I apologize. So it would just be the balance on November 8th.
And so, of course, the question that Representative Eastman's question really asks is, so it doesn't have to be a massive market crash. If there's a slight market reduction and there's $1 million less in the earnings reserve on June 30th, 2023, than there was on November 8th, 2022. Does that basically mean that at least with the second portion of the amendment, we would have to come up with the additional $1 million?
Chair Klayman, this is Emily from Legislative Legal Services. Yes, that's how I would interpret that.
Okay.
Question for the sponsor.
Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
And it occurred to me that, you know, perhaps it's your intent that it does be the higher amount. You know, in a more optimistic scenario, maybe the ERA performs better than expected. Now there's extra money in the ERA. Would your intent be to capture that surplus as well and put that in the corpus? So I just wanted to ask you that.
Yeah, Representative Eastman, through the chair, a bit agnostic, because, I mean, it might sound flip, but, you know, when we're talking about $75 billion and, you know, whatever the balance in the area may be, 10, 15, what's a couple hundred million here and there? I'm joking, but when we're talking about such massive amounts, I think it's like really just like protecting the bulk sums that is the goal. I mean, certainly wouldn't be opposed, and sort of in the spirit of past questions, including from Representative Vance, whenever there's an opportunity to err towards saving more money for the future, I'm personally always sort of predilected towards that. But that's you know, something we could take up in the future if warranted.
All right. I would just note that for those that think the only dividend we should pay is a surplus, then if there was $1 million extra than was there in November, at least there'd be enough money to pay a small dividend. All right, but I know some people don't think that's humorous. So I don't see any other questions. Is the objection to the amendment maintained, Representative Eastman?
I will withdraw my objection.
Is there further objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is approved. That brings the bill back before the committee and final comments. And we're on the usual 3-minute limit. And this time, Representative Snyder, you're up first in the queue.
No, thank you, Chair.
Representative Drummond.
I like this bill. It seeks to protect the permanent fund.
Thank you. And it also says the legislature does not have to take money from the permanent fund. They may appropriate from the permanent fund and not more than 5%, so they could appropriate 2% or 3% or whatever is fiscally prudent. I like this. I like this resolution, and I will be supporting it.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a lot of things that I like about this bill, because there's wisdom in wanting to protect against what we know as drunken sailor syndrome among the legislators. I want to preserve the safety of the fund and not continue to spend at will that we feel is at a detriment to our future. And you know, the wording, as Representative Drummond mentioned, about may appropriate means that, you know, if we don't have to draw from it a certain year, that we shouldn't. There's wise language in here, but I feel that it doesn't go far enough in what it could do. And when it comes to our Constitution, any amendments I take very, very seriously, and feel that we need to be looking at the further conversation about the percentage of the royalties. And I did ask Ledge Finance for a model of what would it look like, what would the fund look like at 50% royalties going to the permanent fund and 100% going. And the answer that I got back, I felt I was not satisfied. I didn't know. I'm still learning to ask questions in the way that will produce the model that I'm looking for. And I didn't get there yet. That's why there was no amendment, because I want there to be weight to the amendment, you know, of good reason if I'm going to make such a radical proposal, that I want it to be a sound decision. And I believe that we've had a lot of models out there about the future of the fund and the effects, but I wanted to have that before me, before I propose any changes. I think that is a consideration that we need to be looking at for our future of capturing all of the royalties, all of the natural resources that we have that we want to preserve for the future. And also, as we move to kind of an endowment state, that we see that we're going, what are we doing to be able to best utilize that? And then from the perspective of the people in my district, I feel like if we left this amendment without a dividend, they would not be pleased. And I'm considering, you know, the fuller picture here, that we can't leave that conversation out for Alaskans, because they would feel shortchanged once again. They have a lot of people who feel that the earnings money in the earnings reserve should have been distributed to them via you know, a fuller PFD these past several years, and want to make sure that that's a part of the conversation. And we understand the principle of the earnings reserve money being put into the principal of the fund will in turn become a dividend, could become a dividend of some form, but we're still dealing with people feeling that they've been robbed. And so I just want to make sure that we have the fuller conversation. So I understand, I support the a lot of the wisdom in this, and want to move money into the corpus, but I'm not there yet because I feel like it's not the complete picture.
All right. Thank you, Representative Anson. You were a little pushing the edge on 3 minutes. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I have to conclude, looking at the language of the amendment, that there are some assumptions baked in here, assumptions to changing statutes, because, of course, when we eliminate the earnings reserve account, you know, which would, you know, statutorily be used to pay dividends, that puts a conflict between statute and the Constitution. I wonder what the other statute changes are, other bills that we expect would pass along with this, and likewise, what other constitutional amendments would are we expecting would pass as well, because there are assumptions, and maybe in statute it's okay to make some assumptions. Sometimes we have to, but when you're talking about changing the Constitution, if you make the wrong assumption, you end up in a constitutional crisis, and that's an entirely different, you know, animal to deal with. And so, whether, you know, if in fact we are expecting some other things to pass, I'd kind of like to know what is the package that we're expecting. Or alternately, there's constitutional amendments out there right now that, if they passed, this would, you know, would have challenges. I look at this as a surgical approach, which, you know, would have to be part of a bigger package, and I'm wondering what the bigger package is. So until I know what the bigger package is, how the dividend will be accounted for in statute going forward, et cetera, I'm not able to support it this time.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Representative Kirka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm still thinking about how I'm going to vote on this coming to the floor, because some of the comments of my colleagues, especially associated with myself, with the comments of Representative Vance. In terms of the bigger package, I think it's certainly a question when it comes to other amendments, but when we're passing constitutional amendments, I think it's assumed that the statutes are subservient, and they will have to be changed to accommodate it. And so I'm not really worried about the statutory package, so to speak, as long as the language in the amendment or the resolution at this point is what we want. So probably going to be a no recommendation at this point, but I'm leaning towards supporting on the floor.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee's consideration, and to Representative Vance's comments, I'd be very interested. I mean, there's still another committee, and as stated earlier, it's a question that interests me a lot. So excited to pull on that thread going forward, and keep me apprised what you hear from LegFi, and we can figure out if further revision may be warranted. I think much of what I have to say has been said at another point, and I mean, not to associate myself with the comments of someone outside this committee, but I agreed very much with some of the comments Representative Carpenter made in terms of a motion that was considered on the House floor earlier today. I'm very motivated to try to resolve some of the structural issues, and that's very much the spirit from which this comes.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Well, I like Representative Drummond. I like this resolution. Having come from municipal government before coming here, I always thought the Anchorage tax cap actually worked pretty well. A lot of people didn't like it, but I came to be a big fan of the Anchorage tax cap, and we talk about tax caps and we talk about spending caps here in the legislature. This is actually better than either of those, in my opinion, because you just don't have the money. And if you don't have the money, you can't spend the money. And I think this is a very positive step with respect to the package that Representative Eastman asked about. I think that any constitutional amendment, you can't ever assume there will be another amendment to go with it on the ballot that year. And I think Representative Kirkley is 100% correct that whatever may be in the statute, that the Constitution is what counts. And so I look at any amendment like this on its own merits, and I can't vote up or down on it dependent on anything else. It either rises or falls on its own merits, and this is one I think has tremendous merit. I will last comment that I think the great debate that we will have as we go forward as a state is about taxes versus dividends, and that to the extent that people really want dividends, we're going to have to start paying taxes almost exclusively for the purpose of paying dividends. And if that's the priorities we have as a state, then we should figure that out and start doing it. But if we conclude that is really not the best way to spend our money, and we don't really want to spend the taxes, then I think we're going to have to start saying dividends aren't on the equation. And I think that's the path that we're going, is the debate between taxes versus dividends. The governor has a proposal in his 10-year economic plan for $1 billion in new taxes. And I don't know a lot of people that are very interested in approving those taxes. And if you don't approve those taxes, then you're left with either massive cuts, which are grossly unpopular, or not paying dividends. And I think those are the choices that we're going to have going forward. And I think this amendment actually makes sure we start having that discussion in a meaningful way. So that's why I support this amendment, or this resolution. And with that, Representative Snyder may have a motion.
I move version 32-LS0167/I of House Joint Resolution 1 as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, House Joint Resolution 1 moves from committee. Please stay behind to sign the paperwork. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Monday, May 3rd at 1 p.m., and the time now is, looks like, about 1:38. Don't forget to stay behind for paperwork.